You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Welcome to a new episode of Delirious Nomads, brought to you by Blacklight Media Records, a weekly podcast hosted by yours truly, celebrity chef Chris Santos. I hate calling myself that. And underground metal connoisseur Matt Bacon, who loves being called that. This is your new favorite podcast for all things heavy metal, as well as breakdowns of your favorite combat sports and riffing on some food talk every week with very special guests from across the globe.
Hello and welcome to the Delirious Nomads podcast. But today, I'm introducing the show. Me, Matt, we're Delirious Nomad. Chris couldn't make it because life is terrifying. And he has, you know, things that are more important than his heavy metal label that he does with his friend. I am here with a very dear friend of mine, a much hyped guest of the show, the one and only Trevor Sternad.
The crowd goes wild. What is up, Matt Bacon?
And the problem with this podcast is that Trevor and I hang out too much.
Yeah, so this could get a little weird here.
So. Yeah, so Chris, we apologize in advance. Let's get right into it. You know, you and I obviously know each other super well. I wanted to kind of unpack a few things that I don't think you really get into in other interviews. So probably should have prepared more to do that. But what I wanted to kind of get at you about, you know, was you and I have been talking a lot lately about live music coming back, how things are going to start to reemerge, you know, and it feels like things get more optimistic by the day. On a scale of 1 to 10, how optimistic do you feel? How do you think it's going to go?
I feel like I've gone from a 6 to an 8 recently, like going live on Irving Plaza's Instagram and talking about the show we have there coming up, and that being the first show, like, really on the books to the public, and, you know, fans are getting excited. They're kind of, you know, drawing conclusions about a tour, and I can't go back now. Like, I've accepted that it's going to happen, and I'm, like, fully, you know, I'm getting there. Like, I really see the light at the end of the tunnel now, and, you know, even just going out in public now, it's, just like I was out last night and it just felt different. You know, I think people feel relieved. You can like sense the relief everywhere. And, you know, people seem happy. I was happy just to like be seen emoting, you know,
right.
You know, I feel like that's like really lost, especially with me. Like, I think my mouth says a lot, even when I'm not talking.
And now, yeah, and so now you sort of start to feel human again.
A little, yeah, like last night specifically, like, yeah, just felt more normal, felt kind of relaxed. Yeah, dude, if it's indications of what's to come. I mean, as far as I know, every promoter, you know, like we have the tour cooking for fall, which, you know, details aren't too far off from the public. I can't divulge too much because they'll cut my nutsack open. You know how that goes, but it looks good. Like the promoters are stoked. Like everyone believes it's going to happen to that end. So like, you know, who am I to poop on that? You know, so I'm really like slowly warming up to it after like some dark times. And yeah, I'm optimistic, you know, if anything about the States, you know, I feel like the States are, yeah. I feel like we're getting there, you know?
So, you know, what you said about the sense of relief over the city has definitely been like insane to watch. Like how much more chill people are than they were 3 weeks ago. How much does the environment around you impact your mood?
I guess a lot, you know, I kind of feel like I went through it with New York. You know what I mean? In a way, mm-hmm. just like by being here and living here, and you're living so close to so many people. And it's really easy to like get a sense of like the mood that's in the air citywide almost, because it's so like tangible and there's just so many people around and stuff. So yeah, you know, I feel like I just sense it all around, you know, where that it's just the tides are turning and people's spirits are lifting, and just like the whole, like, I don't know, like really starting to feel like there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and that one day, you know, far from now, we'll find a mask on the ground and be like, yeah, that was whack. Glad that's over. <You know?
laughs> So here's what I also wanted to ask you about. This is kind of more of a weird technical question. This is the longest gap between Black Dahlia shows ever by a lot. like you had the live stream show back in December,
mm-hmm.
but even still, this is a pretty huge gap. Like, I don't think you've ever been off for 6 months.
That's true. It's true.
Yeah. How do you think you're going to get back on the horse? Like, how long are you preparing? Because I'd imagine, with a band who tours as much as you do, I imagine you don't have to do that much tour prep normally. But now it's got to be a different beast, right?
Yeah, I'm hoping that we'll practice a few more times than we normally would going into a tour. Now, usually it's like 2 or 3 days. Yeah, like normally, like you said, we're not apart that for that long. You know what I mean? We're not off duty really for that long, you know, but there will be, definitely a period of kind of like sharpening everything back up. Going back to even do that stream, I was pretty surprised by how natural like it was after being away so long, you know? So I guess it remains to be seen a little bit, but I'd like to be cautious about it and have a little more practice going into it, you know what I mean? Because it's going to be a lot. Like you said, it's going to be kind of a big change. It's going to be kind of like scary all over again in a way, you know what I mean? To just kind of put yourself out there like that. But in another sense, you know, I feel like it's going to be come with that kind of big wave of relief too. And I won't be surprised if I get a little emotional, even for a few shows there, you know, it's going to be kind of surreal, I think. And just I'm kind of thankful for the way it's like shaken people and like made them appreciate music and appreciate all the hard work that we do and kind of like the sacrifice of living in vans and shit like that. You know, I hope people have like, you know, they've had time to think about it. They've definitely had time to like take it, you know, realize they've taken it for granted maybe. So, you know, I'm excited to just like feel that like tangible excitement like that. You know, I definitely have it like brewing inside of myself, and it's made me way more thankful for what, you know, I mean, I try to be grounded as it is, you know, but with this band, but you know, there's been so much time to reflect in ways that I never had because we were always just go, 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 go. And pretty much the credo of the band has been to never stop. Like to be in this band, you have to do what we're going to do. Basically, it's like part of what you're signing on for is like always yes and never no, you know? So sure. If there's an opportunity, we're taking it, man. And we had too much pride, I think, to ever slow down or stop. So in a way, like I really needed this and I didn't realize it, a kind of reset, you know what I mean? And you know, I think I'm walking away from it maybe a bit stronger, like kind of enduring the trials of like facing yourself that intensely, you know, when there's really nothing else to do. I think everybody in the world must have had to do that during this time. You know what I mean? I don't know. I think we're all going to come out of this a little bit stronger, and I'm just stoked to take another step towards normalcy. And I'd love to entertain some folks by screaming like a wet cat.
I sure do love the heavy metal show. down at Irving Plaza.
And like the sales for that are like flying already, and it's really far out at this point, you know? So I feel like that's somewhat indicative of the excitement and anticipation people have to get back to live music. And it feels really awesome, man, to just even have one show on the books.
Yeah.
For people to be like excited about, you know, like.
Well, that's what you were saying, was some of the stuff that you have coming up might be some of your biggest stuff ever, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, we've definitely, it really hurt to lose a Testament tour, you know, and just kind of have that kind of like dissolve into like purgatory, basically. But, you know, we had to kind of respond pretty quickly after that and start assembling a new tour to headline. And I'm really proud about the lineup. I think it's really awesome and diverse, and it's going to be huge, man. So this is a great way to kick things off and get back to it. It's definitely going to be crowded, I think, for a while, the touring scene. It definitely is around the summer and fall months as it is, because you know, people can get time off and shit. But I think we're gonna see like too much at once maybe for a while. Maybe people will get back to being burnt out too quickly. I'm not sure. I it's hard to say, but yeah, man, I think, you know, everybody's got to be eager to hit the ground running. You know what I mean? We weren't the only band like put on ice by this, you know? And again, you know, I'm thankful for how it kind of played out for us having that new record ready to excrete at that time, you know, just like we could have been stuck with no anything, no content prepared, no nothing. But luckily we had this, like, you know, the big storm of press brewing.
Yeah.
And you know, people being trapped at home, all different, you know, people that run different fanzines and websites and shit, we're all stuck at home too, all of a sudden, wanting something to do. And that something to do was to talk in circles with me. So I had a shit ton of press, and, you know, I just tried to do as much as I could. And I thought we, you know, had a decent rollout for what it was, you know, for being unprecedented territory. And yeah, I'm glad we did it. And in a way, I'm kind of excited to go out and play on a Verminous tour, the big new record, and people will know the songs. They've had time to digest, because it's usually, we're going out, we're playing these new songs, you know, pretty close to when the album has dropped. And, you know, it takes people a while to get caught up. You know, the songs are fast. They're densely packed with information at times. You know what I mean? It's not exactly like a new AC/DC song, you know, necessarily. It takes some time to digest and get its hooks in you, you know. So this could be the first time we're rolling out on the first day of a new album theme tour, and people could be out in the crowd knowing all the words, you know what I mean? So, you know, I'm hoping that all it did was create more anticipation for the new music to be heard live, you know. And yeah, you know, I hope that that Verminous is still at the boil that I believe it to be, you know.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious for the renewal of interest in bands like yours, where it's, or in records like that one rather, where, like, I feel like if I'm your average Black Dahlia fan and then I see a record is coming in, or the tour is coming around, I'm going to go dig back into that record in a deep way that I maybe didn't, you know. Like, I think you're going to get an interesting extra boost.
That's cool. I'm definitely ready to remind people again, you know, like, it's fucking here. Let's do this. So, yeah, dude, I hope that it'll bring out another wave of attention to the record. And, yeah, it's just interesting because we're just going to hit the ground like it never happened, basically. You know, yeah. I see probably another 2 or 3 years ahead of touring on the record, you know, with any luck. You know, we pretty much just kind of feel the demand out and just take it as far as we can, you know, each time. We're, you know, we're kind of learning to do that. So Nightbringers was really successful, and it saw us dragging the tour process out even longer. You know, there was more more places that were eager to see us. And, you know, we, of course, had to jump at those opportunities. And so, yeah, you know, I'm hoping that this will see us being draped in green and rats and snakes for the next couple years here, you know?
Yeah, I certainly hope so. So does that mean new music is a while away?
I think so, but I'm also kind of the last guy to know too. Sure. Like, I don't think Brian's actively writing right now, but Brandon is somewhat of an enigma anyway, as it is. Like, I don't always know what he's up to. He's kind of like a private guy and kind of quiet. So he could be like well into his secret laboratory by now. You know, I have no fucking clue. And, you know, he's a really creative guy. If he's not making music for us, he's probably making some other kind of music. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if something existed towards the 10th Black Dahlia record, you know.
Holy shit, 10.
Yeah, 10. Isn't that wild?
That's like, it's just like so nuts, because it's like, this is going to be like some dumb old man shit, but I think you'd appreciate it. You're like my legacy band, if that makes sense. Like,
it
you're,
does. It does. That's like, that's really cool. Like, I, you know.
But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know, like, we looked to Cannibal Corpse. You know what I mean? And for that, and like took tons of inspiration on how to have a longevity and to have a global presence, you know, like we looked to them. And I mean, that is just hearing you say that is a fucking huge, immense honor. You know what I mean? Because I don't know. It's just, it's awesome. That's what we hoped for. And
yeah, I mean, it's just weird to think about that. Like, Black Dahlia probably came onto my radar when I was in 2010. So I was 14 years old. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And you were what? You were on album 4, maybe album 3 at that point?
2010. That was Deflorate. So fourth record.
Yeah, exactly. So you were still like, you know, you were still figuring it out at that point.
Oh, for sure. For sure. You know, I'm still growing a lot. And I feel like we were still visibly young at that point.
Yeah.
And still kind of touted as a young band, you know, like that was like often in the same sentence as Black Dahlia Murder, like especially around Unhallowed, you know, when we were coming out.
Yeah.
But in reality, like I wasn't that as young, maybe, you know, like I was already like 21, 22, you know, even when Unhallowed came out. But
yeah.
Corey, the drummer especially, like he was literally like 16 when we started to play together, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's weird to be kind of like these elder statesmen now, you know, like there's still like an even older generation that's still going that we look up to, you know, but like now kids come up to me at shows and talk to me like I'm this old wizard, which I'm like slowly realizing that I am an old wizard here.
Well, you know, your beard isn't big enough yet. Like we need to get like,
I just turned 40. It could be white enough though. If I grew it out, I'm definitely,
that would be sick. That would be super sick. If you like just leaned into it.
Yeah, I am, dude. I'm not going to just ferment this shit, dude. I'm I think it's fine, you know. I think that women should like rock the grays too. Just do it. It's cool, you know. Like I think an older woman with an, you know, all gray long hair, dude, it can be beautiful, man. What's, I'm not fucking around here.
No, I get it. I love that this is the track we went down.
So y'all, you know me. I'm in.
It's what we do.
Man, I don't even remember what we were talking about. I got distracted by my ladies.
Yeah, right. No, we're talking about the scene elder thing and how it's sort of like,
oh yeah, like kids come up to me now and you know they're 15, which was basically the age I was when I started like really getting plugged into metal and death metal and going to shows, and you know they look at me like I'm this old, you know, wizard.
Yeah.
I guess so. Like I've, you know, almost toured for 20 years now and we've kind of like seen a few trends come and go and kind of survived. You know, like, and that was another thing that we saw, or at least I saw that happened, you know, like with Cannibal Corpse was, and everybody else, the end of the 90s was not so kind to death metal. You know what I mean? Like after the first kind of big wave came into a huge popularity and then maybe got a little bit oversaturated and people got burnt out. I think around 95, like the tides had kind of turned a little bit, you know what I mean? And then you had like new metal come down the pipes and, you know, all different kinds of flavors of heavy music. But, you know, metal is gonna wax and wane in popularity. You know what I mean? And different trends are going to come and go. And, you know, watching Cannibal Corpse as a legacy band kind of made us realize that, you know, that there's going to be times that are leaner than others. And, you know, the underground never goes away, but you could definitely safely say that, like, it's in a giant upswing right now. You know what I mean? Like, it feels to me like just a continuation of this kind of renaissance that I've felt over the last several years, you know, where just so much of the youth is getting into this music. You know, I think that, like, you know, it's cliche to say that angry times kind of, like, bring people to angry music as therapy, but you know, like look at the world and look what's, you know, look what's happening and look how many people are, young people are excited about this music. You know, it's definitely always been a kind of therapy for me and an escape from reality and kind of like, I don't know, like that's my whole thing here with music and with this band, and like this is where I fit in. Like in life, I feel like the most out of place, like fish out of water,
yeah.
You know, like, and so like, I'm just so happy to talk to metalheads and just kind of like shrink the my view down to like, just what I like.
Eight
and
people.
Love.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. And just, you know, so like going back to shows is going to be like being just given my life back, you know, like just what I enjoy to do and the people I enjoy to talk to and be around and where I feel the most safe and the most loved and the most, you know, just, you know, it's going to be awesome. It's something that I really look forward to, something that I cherished already, you know, but I've been away from for so long that it's just, you know, multiplied and multiplied. I've had so much time to really reflect on this entire ride of being in this band, you know, like maybe I wouldn't have had the same revelations that I've had, like if I didn't have the entire world stop on us, you know what I mean? So I'm coming out of this like 40 years old. I feel like somehow something clicked when I turned 40. I don't really know what it was. Maybe that's kind of cliche to say, but I don't know. I just feel kind of good in my skin here and ready to go back to it. And yeah, I'm just thankful, man. Just thankful that people pulled together, most of them, you know, in order to get us here. And yeah, I just want to be back out and just not take it for granted. And, you know, I got a lot of hugs to give and I'm fucking ready to give them.
Yeah. So I have a couple final points I want to get into. First, I want to talk about, you know, we always talk about like the Michigan metal and hardcore scene, right? I want to talk about a band I discovered on LimeWire when I was a kid. Okay. Biddy's Love Monkey. Talk to me about them.
Oh. Biddy's Love Monkey is a very fine new metal band from Michigan that featured a bass player named Ryan Bart Williams, who would eventually play in the Black Dahlia Murder. And this is really just a super blow the belt attempt to shame Ryan into oblivion.
It's the whole point of my existence, bro.
But I kind of love Ryan's story and like his friends and they were all in that band together, and they lived like in Ludington, which is like you can't find somewhere in Michigan where there's less going on than Ludington.
Sure.
Like there, it was like a vacation town where people came to like go boating, and they called the people that came through town cone suckers, you know, like the transients that came through for the summer. And they would drive 3 hours to go see shows in Grand Rapids. And then eventually they made this pact, like basically two bands worth of people, to move down to Detroit together and like kind of like foster, like, you know, at least they had those friends, you know. So they came, they made these two bands, they became like a part of the Detroit scene. And I just like that story. It's, you know, fucking a bunch of nerds banding together, bringing their nerdery to the thumb of Michigan where other nerds could fucking there check it go. Out.
Ryan, we adore you. But what I seriously wanted to get into with you was you have a pretty active hand in choosing the lineups that play on Black Dahlia Murder tours. Can we talk a little bit about some of the logic behind that? You know, I don't want to get too granular, but I'd love to kind of know what goes through your mind when you're choosing.
Right. Games. Oh yeah. You know, it's tough. Honestly, it's really tough. I think what people don't understand are the, like, it's the minutia of the politics going into like asking another band to join you. And you know, we'll have a budget, of course, that we're trying to like keep pretty tight, so we only have a certain amount of money to offer the other bands. And sometimes like it's not what people want to hear, you know what I mean? And sometimes we're on the other end of that when we're negotiating with other bands. And, you know, sometimes it's legacy and ego kind of stuff. You know, sometimes it's just monetary, or, you know, like it's this part of the game is just very sensitive and people don't really think about what goes into it. You know, they'll really see that kind of negotiation and the back and forth of like, you know, like put the roster on the bill and like, you know, who is supposed to be where in terms of popularity and things like that. They're all very important and very, you know, it's hard to make a tour. I feel like any tour we've put together, the lineup you see is plan Z. You know what I mean? Like very rarely do you reach out to people and the stars just perfectly align and the money offers are just perfectly right. And everything just checks out in a way that like, it's a home run. You know what I mean? Like it's, I wish it would work that way. But like pretty much going into any tour, the skeleton of the very first lineup is completely comes with an asterisk, basically. Like there's no there's no guarantees for anything. You know what I mean? So, but, you know, booking for Black Dahlia Murder, like, I had to realize over the years that the band wasn't really seen in the same light as I had imagined it would be, or like maybe wanted it to be. To me, I wanted to be considered strictly this death metal band and kind of get props from that scene solely. And just the way we looked and the bands that we came up around and things like that, different kind of factors kind of stopped that, I guess. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like people made assumptions about us because we had short hair, or we were, you know, on a build next to Azalea Dying, who, you know, like metalcore was really popping off at the time. And we were kind of had one foot in that. You know what I mean? Like, admittedly, we did come from that scene, you know, like the early demo of the band is like, it's a very different Black Dahlia than you see today. And it was, you know, Prayer for Cleansing, Undying, kind of in a blender, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Looking up to the pre-B-Team Bam band, Prayer for Cleansing, those guys were the gods then. But yeah, so I had to realize that our fans maybe have a different taste than me. You know what I mean? Like, if fans consider our band deathcore, then they want to see us with deathcore bands, probably. You know what I mean? And I'm thankful to have such variety out there. Like, that's how we fill a room. It's not just because we have one niche of people that like the band, but we've been very fortunate to be this weird kind of breakout band. You know, like, this has gotten bigger and more accessible and more popular than I had ever saw for the band, you know. And really, like, the biggest turning point, I think, was the getting on Ozfest, and that just changed the trajectory tremendously. Like, I never saw us as being accessible enough to be on that kind of a thing. And this was before you'd see Behemoth in a parking lot tour and Cannibal Corpse as well. You know what I mean? Like, so
yeah,
it was like just before that, basically. So, you know, I was skeptical. I never saw us being on a Sounds of the Underground or Ozfest or like getting this kind of high profile love like that. And that was really the beginning of realizing that the band was doing something different than I had, you know, you couldn't control the trajectory yourself. You can't choose how it plays out. It just kind of does. And then you can react to it intelligently or not. You know what I mean? Like, I could be having a fit about what people call us and, like, you know, stomp my feet about it. But in reality, like, I learned to not give a shit. You know, if people can call our music toxic butt music, like, I don't care. Like, as long as they like it, you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
We joke about, like, if heavy metal never happened sometimes. And Brian was like, you know, I think it would have happened and just would have been called something else. And he's like, yeah, I think maybe like heavy bark. You know, that would, it just would have came out anyway. So yeah, people want to call us heavy bark or whatever. Like, I don't really give a fuck, you know, as long as they're calling us, you know. So, and no matter how deep I get into the scene and how many tiny little cool bands I like or anything like that, it's never going to make my band any cooler to some people. You know what I mean? It's just, yeah. It's a lost cause to think that way. You know, be thankful for what you have. And, you know, I'm thankful that we have like so many different kinds of fans. I like seeing the variety. I like being that the center of the Venn diagram. You know what I mean?
Sure.
That brings different kinds of people together in the underground. And, you know, we're just a misfit band, I guess, you know, and as much as I wanted to fit in, we just didn't. And I'm thankful for how it's played out. And I feel like it's given me a lot more freedom to kind of just entirely be myself, you know, on stage or just here in the interview forum. And I don't know, like I said, like, you know, metal and these dealings are like my happy place, you know. So
it's funny that you talk about, no matter how many weird little things you uncover, people won't think you're cool. I'm literally, as we're talking, I'm getting trolled by some guy on Instagram who's like, oh, you don't fucking know anything. What fucking scene cred? And I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, dude, I just had, you know what I mean? Like, there's certain people that Black Dahlia Murder is never going to win over. Basically.
Totally.
And that's okay. I can live with that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I, well, what I wanted to say too, that's the flip side of that, is the people who do think you're cooler when you start posting about, you know, Hovedania or something. And like, that's one of my favorite parts of TikTok fame has been like, I'll make a joke about how like, oh yeah, man, you're not just a pebble on a beach. And there'll always be like one dude in the comments like, you know about Inside Out? What the fuck?
Yeah, I do love how it's all kind of, how it's tied together. And I've always seen like, I don't know, like I've always been like with one foot in the hardcore scene, I guess, throughout this entire thing. You know what I mean? And like always take something away from that scene. And so like there is a lot of what Black Dahlia does that was
pulled from that
because we caught our teeth in that scene, you know, like
really
being up close with bands that were DIY, you know, playing early shows with bands like Bane that just like really break down that fourth wall where, you know, the crowd and the band are one. And, you know, some metal bands stand up there like they're on some kind of pedestal and they're playing to you as the peasant down there. And, you know, I guess that works as a presence for some, you know what I mean? But for me, it's just that exchange, you know, it takes two parties. And I really like when it gets like sloppy and stage divey and I can put my mic right in people's mouths. There's no barrier per se, or, you know, like I love punk Black Dahlia shows. Like those are my favorite ones, like the ones where people can really express themselves and go off. And I trust the crowd. I trust our people so much. Like I don't feel like we need to be policed in that way sometimes, you know? So like, it's just, it's a really good feeling to play those shows. And yeah, if I had it my way, we would play like small rooms in front of everyone if we could, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's where we really thrive. And, it's from kind of where we came up and, you know, playing those hardcore shows and trying to compete with those bands that were so impassioned and also so exciting on stage, just whacking at these three chords. And we would try to like, even then our music was technical and more in like more difficult than your average hardcore music. I'm not trying to slight anybody out there, but you know, like it was hard to compete with those bands. It made us, I don't know, like just really strive for more to be
more
like
compelling.
This, more compelling to be like more of a killing machine and more exciting. And just the way that I look at performance is so much taken from punk and specifically from Black Flag and Henry Rollins and his like just approach to stage presence and music and art. And just like, it's, I feel like it's a forum to go out there and just completely destroy yourself, like in the best way possible. Like if you don't care about what you're doing and you don't care about your art as you're like presenting it, like what's the point? You know, like it's the exchange for me is it's so powerful. And it's like a feeling that you can't quantify or describe even, you know, like when you're playing a show to your people that love you and you're having that like back and forth of energy and, you know, the give and take of it all, and the connection, I think is just like, that's what I miss the most here. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's the purest moment of being in a band. That's the really the part that drives everything in being a band, like why you want to make a song, why you want to make a flyer, why you want, you know what I mean? Like it's all about that, honestly. Like the records are just a snapshot so you can be caught up to what we're doing, you know what I mean? And it's really about the live show. And you know, like it's been the focus. Like we realized this was going to be the focus of the band, and like we strive to be a live band, you know, and we think about what music's going to sound like live when we're writing it. And, you know, more so now in our age than we did when we started out. You got to think about, you got to think about your music coming out of the speakers at a windy ass German festival. And you know what I mean? Like trying to make music that's legible in a live situation, even though it's extreme, you know, like there's a kind of give and take on that, that we've like really realized more over the years. And, you know, like now it's just down to the details, man. Like I feel like we have the BDM formula, but now we just get more intelligent with it and we learn more and we, you know, I just still feel like there's so much more to do. I feel still very young creatively in the band. I feel like the group that we have right now is so exciting to work with and so excited to work together that like there's going to be a lot more special music coming down the pipes, I feel like. And I feel like this is a real kind of golden era for us, and it's exciting.
Totally. I think that's a good place to call it. Thank you so much for coming on Delirious Nomads.
Hey, thanks for having me. Much love, dude.
All right, so that was awesome. Thank you, everyone out there, for listening to Delirious Nomads, sponsored by Blacklight Media. We will be coming back at you next week with another awesome guest. Be sure to follow Blacklight Media on socials for new music and more, and above all, keep it heavy.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan, and this is the Corner of Gray Street podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the Corner of Gray Street.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen, and wherever you get your podcasts.